It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. You live it up the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York. It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. I'm Chris Sheeran, joined with, as always, by my partner in crime, Mr. Joe Auriemma.
It's good to be here, Chris. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here in my office once again with the door closed and, you know, so no one else could hear what we're talking about. We have Kevlar surrounding the office, much like Tony Romo and Michael Vick will have Kevlar surrounding their entire bodies this week, and that isn't a joke, that's actually fact.
Yes.
Michael Vick will be wearing a Kevlar helmet, and Tony Romo will be wearing a Kevlar rib protection. He will be wearing basically a bulletproof vest to protect him from the Redskins, and Michael Vick will be wearing a bulletproof helmet to protect him from the Giants. But anyway, we're going to get to football in a second. We're going to bring in a very special guest, Yes Network's own Greg Berton. That's in our next segment to talk a little football. But first, we're going to handle the baseball. And we have to start, of course, with your American League Eastern Division champion, New York Yankees. They kicked things off, Joe, the 2011 season. They were supposed to be the underdog. They were supposed to barely get the wild card in spring training. We talked about this with everybody we talked to down there, Nick Swisher, A.J. Burnett. I'm sure you brought it up after I came home with the players. You know, what's it like being the underdog when you're the New York Yankees? And they all said, you know, let's play the games first. And we always say it, it's a 162-game season. No one really grasps that in April and May. All they see is like an 0-8 or an 0-10 against the Red Sox. The sky is falling. You know, my God, here we go again.
Chris, we talked about this early in the year. And one thing I always say to you and you always say to me is, I hate predictions. I know it sells papers, it sells magazines, you know, the football preview, the baseball preview, who, you know, Tom Verducci's making his picks, who's making the, and I'm not just singling out Tom Verducci, everybody does it.
Oh, not everybody.
Everybody does it. And I went on to the WFAN podcast earlier in the year, and they, you know, Neil Keefe asked me to make a prediction. I predicted that the Red Sox would have 98 wins, and the Yankees would have 93. Five, and both teams would be in the postseason. And I said, the reason is, I said, I don't like to make predictions, but if I have a gun to my head, I'm saying this. Because you looked at the Red Sox pitching staff, you looked at the Yankees pitching staff, and for a good portion of the season, Bartolo Colon and Freddy Garcia did their job, and that's why the Yankees have the wins that they have. And Ivan Nova, the season that he's having. So, yeah, I got a little egg on my face, too, for making that prediction. But that's why I don't like making predictions, because you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know that Clay Buchholz is going to go down. You don't know that, you know, half their pitchers are going to be, you know, you knew Lackey was going to be crap. But they're a terrible pitching staff right now. And that's the difference between the Yankees and the Red Sox.
And you know the difference in the wild card right now. Maybe, you know, everybody, I didn't even get worked up about that 0-6 start that the Red Sox have. But that 0-6 start is looming pretty large now with the Rays only games back at this point.
How about going into this series?
5-16?
The Yankees, not even that. They're 5-16 in September, but the Yankees are 4-11 against the Red Sox.
4-11.
They're 7 games under 500 against the Red Sox, and they're 7 games ahead of them in the standings.
That's
unbelievable.
You can't make it up. And with the series this weekend, regardless, you know, when you listen to this, whatever, the Yankees are about to line up and face the Red Sox for 3 in the Bronx. You know, if the Yankees, and I know Girardi is not going to play everybody, obviously, especially with the weather the way it's supposed to be. You don't want to get anybody hurt. But at the same time, you have an unbelievable opportunity to help get the Red Sox out of the playoffs.
I agree. I totally
agree. Think about
agree.
That for yeah. a second. You know, the Red Sox have to play these 3 games. They need them.
Yeah.
You know, they have to clinch the wild card. Right now, they're with 6 to play. They're 2 up on Tampa.
You know what's funny?
And you know in that dome down in Tampa, it's going to be spring training with the Yankees. You're not. Maybe you have a guy here and there getting in a bat just to stay sharp going into the postseason.
That's
but it's not
saying.
Joe Girardi's going to run out his, you know,
how,
best players to
how
beat the
funny
Rays.
Would it be if the Yankees run out their full squad this weekend? you know, beat the heck out of the Red Sox and then just say, I think we're done. I think we're done when they play the Rays.
What else? I mean, what else do you need to do? I want to backtrack for a second here to the pitching, and I want to give tremendous kudos to Ivan Nova. I mean, this is a kid that you didn't expect anything out of when the season started. He battled in spring training to win the number four job down in Tampa. He gets demoted during the season when Phil Hughes gets healthy.
Guy had the second most wins on the team, and he got demoted.
Gets demoted, could have taken that like a shot to the heart and just gave up. But what does he do? He goes down to Scranton. He gets hurt. He gets two, not one, but two line drives off of his ankle.
And in the time that he did pitch, it was like a man against boys.
Lights out down there in Scranton. As Jack Curry told us earlier this year, there's nothing more Ivan Nova could do at AAA. He's mastered AAA.
Yeah.
So this was the year he had a show that he could do it in the majors, or he probably wasn't going to be with the Yankees anymore. I mean, this was a make-or-break season for Nova, and I felt that confidence. I saw it when this kid was throwing bullpens, when he was throwing live BP down in Tampa. I just saw that he only had two pitches then, and I completely agree with you that, you know, he needed that slider. He needed to work on it. When he went down to Scranton, he developed it, and he came back up to the majors with three pitches, not two, and that did help him. But he did have a lot of wins before he went to Scranton with just those two pitches. I want to bring that up, too.
Yeah.
All right, but the third pitch did help him. But listen, in a year where you thought the Yankees weren't going to win the division because of their starting pitching, this kid, not only does he deserve kudos for maybe the American League Rookie of the Year, and I know you have Granderson, you have Cano, but how about an MVP candidate for the team? Like a team MVP.
Well, I mean, on the team, you got to look at, to me, the catalysts on this team that have really catapulted this team from being, you know, a team maybe fighting for their playoff lives to a team that's winning this division. As always, you're going to say the guys like Mariano Rivera. You're going to say Derek Jeter after he had that, after 3,000, he went on a tear.
People thought he was done.
Okay. I'm going to give you Curtis Granderson. I'm going to give you Robinson Cano. Mm-hmm. Those guys are no-brainers.
Hands down.
But when Soriano went down, when Jabba went down,
David Robertson,
when Pedro Feliciano went down, David Robertson is just as valuable to this team as anybody else.
You're absolutely
this
right.
This is a guy in situations where he's got the bases loaded.
One for 19.
One for 19 with 14 strikeouts. The other night,
that's unbelievable.
One pitch, double play.
Yeah, out of the inning. In a 2-2 game. Think about that, like, mindset. And it doesn't hurt when you have Mariano Rivera that you could, you know, sit in the bullpen with basically for the whole game until you get the call.
Right.
To just sit there and bounce stuff off of and have fun with. I mean, that's like pretty much having Michael Jordan on your bench, you know, when you were a young kid coming up in the NBA. But to have that kind of ice in your veins when you're that young and on that stage, in that big of a game, when you have the division and, you know, hanging in the balance because you know the Red Sox lost already.
Yeah.
And, Joe, I got to tell you.
You know, Chris, it's not just him either. You look at that game one. The game one the Rays absolutely needed to win.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw out every – they had Corey Wade in there. They had, you know, Valdez. They had everybody in that game. This bullpen, from the guys that they've brought up throughout the year,
and
they've been great.
No, AC did a good job.
Oh, Hector Nwesi has been great.
He could be a starter next year.
He could be.
He definitely could be a starter on this team next year. The guy made one mistake, and he couldn't give any more length because he hasn't been stretched out.
The bullpen has really been the MVP of this team this year. I'm not saying that, to me, the thing that separates them is two things. The season that Curtis Granderson's having and the bullpen. And that's why, going into the bullpen discussion, I was going to tell you, I think Curtis Granderson over Justin Verlander is the AL MVP.
I tend to agree with a lot of former pitchers who were asked about this. Pitchers have their award. They have the Cy Young. I don't think they have any business being involved
in
the MVP.
Curtis Granderson is out there 150-plus games. He makes a difference on this team every day.
A starter is out there for
35 games
every fifth day. It doesn't mean there's not a lot of pressure on these guys.
Without CC Sabathia, the Yankees are not the team that they
but
are.
They have
without
an award.
The Tigers,
they have the Cy
Young. But to me, a more valuable player on the Tigers, a more valuable everyday player, is Cabrera. Yeah. I would actually say Cabrera is more of an MVP candidate than Justin Verlander.
Now, people, what you're not seeing right now is the William Shatner histrionics that my partner is using as he's saying this. This should be on camera because it's like I'm Spock and I have Captain Kirk next to me. But I hear you. Absolutely. Now, Joe, let's transform this discussion.
I know we were going off on a tangent,
but it's fine.
Good.
It's fine.
Good baseball. So, good, clean fun.
There's no longer a question if the Yankees are in the playoffs.
Right.
They are in the playoffs.
Right.
And they're home.
Yes.
For the first series we know. And the Orioles just keep helping everybody as they beat the Tigers in the first game of their series on Thursday. So the Yankees keep their lead on the Tigers for the best record in the American League and the home field throughout the American League portion of the playoffs, because we know the National League won the All-Star game, so they will have the home field come World Series time. But
that's
an interesting question. Yeah, an interesting question comes up, and it's one that everyone's been trying to field for quite some time now, maybe the last 3 months of the season, as the Yankees were making their move and getting back into the wild card picture and then the division. Who is going to be that Game 3 starter?
Right, because I think they're going to go Sabathia, Nova, and then the Game 3 starter, and then Sabathia on 3 days rest, and then Nova on full rest for Game 5. I think that's how they would line it up. So that Game 3 starter is the real question mark. So that first series, I think they're going to go three pitchers. Chris, who do you think is going to be the Game 3 starter?
Well, here's...
I have to ask.
Here's how I would set them up. And people are going to think I'm absolutely out of my mind, okay? But I would go CC first, obviously. Now, this is just me. I know a lot of people think Nova should pitch Game 3 and you should put, like, Cologne Game 2. And I've heard that before. The Yankees are home. I would want, and even though Nova's done well on the road this year, let's face it, he's done well everywhere. The kid's only got four losses, and he hasn't lost since June 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
That was me knocking on my desk. I'm not supposed to show my fandom, but you know what? Whatever, journalism. where was I going? Okay, so CC first. I would pitch Nova second because I'd want him to throw at home in the Bronx, maybe be a little comfortable. Maybe CC gets the win in game one, so Yankees are up 1-0. He's got that pressure off him. But I don't think pressure is going to hurt this kid at all.
I don't either.
Whether the Yankees are down a game, they're up a game, they're home or away.
He's extremely confident.
But I think he's earned the right for that game two start.
Not even an issue.
No.
Not even an issue.
Signed for it. Now, game three... On the road, here's where people might think I'm losing.
I'm going to let you say what you're going to say because I want to hear what you have to say.
Here's where people might think I'm going to lose.
By the way, for everybody listening, we had a pre-show meeting where I kind of chastised Chris for saying this. But I want to hear this.
All right. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
I think people know where I'm going. And thank God I'm not on Twitter anymore. Oh, baby. So I don't have to take the abuse. But I am putting my neck on the chopping block for A.J. Burnett.
Get that guillotine ready.
I want A.J. Burnett to get the Game 3 start. And you might say to yourself, my God, why do you want the Yankees to lose Game 3? I don't want the Yankees to lose Game 3. This is A.J. Burnett's season. And I just talked about this with somebody. You know, his last... Five starts to be exact. He's 1-1. His ERA is over 7, and his opponent's batting average is .301. Not good numbers. I get it. Bartolo Colon's 0-2 in his last 5, with an ERA nearing 5, and his batting average against is .282. Both of these guys are laying cookies in their left and right. Here's the difference, though. Between A.J. Burnett and Bartolo Colon, in my eyes. Now, look, you might think I need to go to the doctor and get some medication, but I'm going to throw this out
there. Are these Ray Charles eyes?
Just let me throw this out there. Let me throw it out there.
Okay.
AJ Burnett has shut down number two stuff. Agree or disagree?
I'm not agreeing with you anymore. He doesn't have the stuff anymore.
I think he does.
If the guy
throws five innings, four of those innings are two-hit ball, no runs. It's always that one inning where he gives up 3 to 4 runs. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to telepathically communicate with AJ Burnett. Get rid of that one inning. It's all he really has to do.
It's just
one
that
inning
easy.
Where he blows up. Yes.
It's not that easy, Chris.
Yes, it is.
If it was that easy, he would have done it by now. He's been doing this stuff all season.
I almost gotcha.
He's been doing this all the last two seasons. It's not just this season. I'm telling you right now,
all right,
if I'm the Yankees, I'm not even putting him on the postseason roster.
Okay.
He stinks.
That's fair.
He
stinks. That's fair. I can't say you're wrong. I can't. All I'm saying is I would like to see him get a start. I'm not saying I could defend anything that he's done this year. I can't. He's been bad. But I think, and we've talked about this before, we have, and you've brought it up. And you've been bringing it up all year, so I'm giving you credit.
Okay, but I'm saying, with the stuff part of it, I don't think he has the stuff that he used to have.
Oh, he doesn't.
I really don't.
He doesn't, but he has to learn to use what he has now. He doesn't have 96.
If he hasn't learned by now, he's never going to learn.
I get it. 96, 97, he could kiss bye-bye to that. You know, when he first got here, his first year with the Yankees in 2009, he was throwing 97 miles an hour in the 6th, 7th inning when he used to get there. He doesn't even get there anymore.
He's 93.
Exactly. He doesn't have that stuff anymore, so... But he still has stuff to get guys out. It's just a matter of him learning to do it. And God, if he could just harness that. I don't know. But let me get to Colon. You've been bringing it up all year.
Mm-hmm.
Bartolo Colon has had a long season.
Oh.
The Yankees' plan.
Winter ball.
The Yankees' plan was to bring this guy up, keep him in the bullpen, have him be the long man, keep him rested. They couldn't do that. Phil Hughes got hurt. This guy was pitching so well in the beginning of the season, they had no choice but to keep him in the rotation. Went under the DL with that hamstring, and ever since then, hasn't been the same pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't. I don't care what you say. He's been, since then.
He hasn't been great. No.
Okay, he's not
I agree
been
with
great.
You.
David Cohn said on the broadcast the other night, he's earned the number three start in the postseason. The first half, but if you're going to base it on the second half, and I hate to disagree with David, but if you're going to pick somebody who's earned something or has been consistent, it's Freddie Garcia.
Yeah.
It's not Bartolo Colon.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
But the difference between Freddie Garcia, he pitches to contact. And you know, you're going to get the ball. People are going to hit. Playoff teams, the Tigers are going to hit Freddie Garcia. The Tigers know Freddie Garcia. He used to pitch for him. They know him. Okay?
And if they play the Rangers, that lineup is just going to...
They're going to destroy Freddie Garcia. I don't care what kind of junk you throw up there. If you sit and wait for junk, or if you just sit on his fastball, you're going to destroy him. Destroy him. That's my... Now listen, Bartolo Colon may have earned a start in the postseason. A.J. Burnett hasn't. I have to say he hasn't because of his body of work over the year. But I think if you put those two together, and if you could just get rid of that one freaking inning where it seems to blow up on AJ, I don't know, maybe you catch lightning in a bottle.
Chris has turned into Willy Wonka all of a sudden.
Listen, I could be 100% wrong, and I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to put my neck out there. I'm willing to say this is what I want. Okay, that's part of my job,
right,
to give you my opinion.
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm right.
Right.
That's what people on Twitter get twisted all the time.
Right.
Just because we say something doesn't mean we know we're right.
Mm-hmm.
It's our opinion.
Right.
You guys, everybody has an opinion. You could use an opinion. You know,
we're putting our opinion on a more public forum.
Right.
But...
Right. So you can destroy us.
Right.
Namely me this time. That's fine. And if AJ doesn't make the roster, he doesn't make the roster. I won't see it. Would I understand why he didn't make the roster? Absolutely. I would never throw my arms up in the air because he didn't make the roster.
Yeah.
But what I would like to see is if this guy could, for once in his Yankee career, okay?
Step up.
Yes. Holy God, did you like read my mind or what?
Yeah, I knew where you were going with the N-word.
Yes, I couldn't like get something else to come.
Emerald. up.
Yes.
Cashew up.
For once in his Yankee career, I need to see that, okay? I need to see that. Just once. And if the Yankees in the first round in the ALDS are up 2-0 and there is no pressure, I just like to see what he would do. And if he blew up in that game, he would never touch the ball again. Ever.
What would you know about pressure?
Ever.
Well, I have kissed a man. Dumb and Dumber quote. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Ace Ventura. Ace Ventura quote, folks.
Don't,
sorry.
Don't cross the streams.
I'm sorry.
Don't cross the streams, Joe.
I just don't see it. That's my opinion. That's your opinion. Agree to disagree. Win in Rome. I'm just saying, I do not think he should even be on the postseason roster.
That's fair as well.
I would, at this point, I don't even know if Phil Hughes is healthy. I don't even, which he isn't right now with the back spasms and the herniated disc that he had.
You've got a choice. You've got Cologne, Garcia, Burnett.
I think I'm going Cologne. First round, I'm going Cologne.
All right. That's fair. It's fair. I can't say he hasn't earned it. I think he has, but the first half of the season. His last five starts, I mean, he's been pretty bad.
Yeah, no, he's been awful.
He's been pretty bad.
He's been awful.
And if I'm not mistaken, AJ, his last five in 26 and a third innings. This is the thing. He's 35 strikeouts. He gets guys to swing and miss. He's still...
I think Bartolo's got a good strikeout to walk,
though. He's
got
24-3.
So he's still keeping... Well, he's giving up hits, but he's not... He's still keeping guys off base more than...
Joe, I don't know if he's tired from winter ball. I don't know if maybe the hammy's still bothering him and he's not telling people.
He's
lost velocity.
He has. No, he has. I just think that I would pitch Cologne. I think of the three guys, I'd pitch Cologne.
The last thing I'm going to say about this is I think you're right. I don't think AJ is going to sniff the ALDS roster. My point was, like Joe so poignantly put it, it's time to go get some planners. I mean, it just is. It's,
put up or shut up.
It's time.
Put up or
shut
up.
I'll bring Carl Pavano up. That guy was a ghost for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Burnett goes out there. Okay, he might not be good, but he goes out there.
How about, I'll throw another name out at you. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking Domisel Marte. You're thinking Marte. You're thinking that guy was a ghost, and then he showed up and was a hero in the World Series. I mean, I understand what you're thinking.
I just want to see, for the life of me, I'm just trying to put myself in AJ's shoes, okay? If I stunk... all season long.
What happened to the changeup that he was throwing at the beginning of the year?
See, that's another thing. That's been killing me all year because he used it early in the season and it vanished.
What happened? This guy went from...
When you have a 93 to 94 mile an hour fastball, you need that changeup. Because the hook, he's so hard-headed. I interviewed him after one of his spring training starts when he came out. And I asked him about the changeup. And he said, I told Russell Martin, I'm a fastball curveball pitcher. And if that's how hard-headed he is, that he can't realize that how important that pitch is. He still throws it, Joe, but he doesn't throw it enough. He doesn't throw it enough. He's got to keep guys off balance. He's got to learn Messina learned. What did Mike Messina do his last year?
Pitcher.
But what did he do his last year before he retired? How many games did he win?
120.
He won 20 games because he learned how to pitch. He didn't have that same velocity. He learned he couldn't overpower guys. He had to hit locations, and he had to keep guys off balance.
Moose always hit locations. He was.
I know that. But if he didn't get the location, you could shut the TV off because the game was over. And that's pretty much AJ Burnett. If he's not getting the corners, he's not getting those borderline pitches, it's going to be a long night. It's because it's going to get in his head, and he says, "Oh, fine. If I don't have the inside or outside corner, you're not going to give that to me. I'm just going to lay it right down the middle, and bang. Good night. Have a nice shower. It's over."
Honestly, Larry Rothschild should go to him and just say, whatever Russell puts down, you're thrown.
You throw.
You do not shake off. Yeah, let me tell you something. If we have to treat you like a single-A player, we're going to treat you like a single-A player. Heath puts it down, you throw it. No shake-off.
I think it's time for the, you know, the staff to do a little planners, too, with him. Just, you know, have the coaching staff bring him into the office and say, look, we're going to put you on the roster. You're going to get the Game 3 start. It's time for you to show something. Okay? Right now. Now's the time. Now, I don't know what he, you know, everybody says he's, you know, got problems up here in the Gabeza. You can't look at him and say, this is it, all or nothing, because I don't know what that does to his psyche or, you know, what's going on up there or whatever. I just think, I sound like a broken record. I just think we need to see what this guy is made of, and we need to see it on a postseason stage.
I'll put it to this way. We need to see it next year. I'm not putting that guy out for a postseason start.
Okay.
Show me next year.
All right, we're done with this. I can't keep saying the same thing over and over again. All right, when we come back, football, little Greg Breton.
Sounds good to me.
His debut on the Off the Wall podcast.
Sounds good
to
me.
All right, we'll talk some football next with Greg. Giants and Eagles specifically, but a couple other things. That's next on the Off the Wall podcast.
The Off the Wall podcast is available on iTunes. Don't miss a single episode. Search for Off the Wall and subscribe today.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma back with you with a young man who's making his debut on the Off the Wall podcast. Say hello, Gregory E. Breton.
Chris, what's up? This is Gregory E. Dad Breton. Hello, everyone.
And what is your Twitter handle so the masses know where they could find you on the Twitter?
Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me at E.TV.
That is E-D-O-T.
Underscore. TV.
Underscore TV. So
yes,
E-D-O-T underscore TV. Greg needs some followers. So
yes.
Follow him and, you know. You
get I will it. Lead if you follow.
You get his irreverent chatter on the NFL all season long. This guy lives, breathes, eats, sleeps, and goes to the bathroom football. I think he has a TV in his bathroom, actually, so he doesn't miss
Well, there's
anything.
Practice later on, Chris. So, you know, we got to hurry up. Coughlin's calling me.
All right. let's start there since you made the excellent segue. Giants-Eagles this weekend. Now, the Giants, we know, have been decimated by injuries this year. Mm-hmm. Right before the season started, actually, they lost another player. That would be...
Dominic Hixon.
Well, he was lost last week, but I'm talking about another defensive player going down, another linebacker going down, Sintem. He was lost for the season.
Yes.
Now you have Hixon out. Let me ask you this first. Let me get your opinion, because when I found out Hixon went down, Greg, I immediately thought of two guys that are not playing football right now that could help the Giants in Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. Do you think there's any way the Giants bring either one of these guys in?
You know, I think everybody's been saying that, considering that the Giants haven't made any offseason moves. A lot of teams across the league have made great moves. And
deals wouldn't be guaranteed right now.
Correct. And it seems as though at this point, the signing of Brandon Stokley is the only move the Giants have made. Do I feel they will add Randy Moss to Terrell Owens? With the head coach of the likes of Tom Coughlin and the disciplinarian that he is, signing Terrell Owens coming off an ACL injury, I don't think any team this year is going to sign him. Randy Moss, on the other hand, I think bringing him into the locker room that the Giants have, although they don't have strong personalities, Eli Manning is the leader in that locker room. I don't foresee the Giants bringing him in only because he can bring more damage than good to the chemistry that they do have right now.
Right, but you have Hakeem Nicks also who's playing hurt as well.
Yes.
He wasn't 100% in the Monday night game against St. Louis, so you're like one bad cut from losing your number one receiver. What do
Agreed.
You do then?
Basically, recently, I think this morning, they re-signed Michael Clayton, who was with the team in throughout the summer camp. I mean, that's good only because he understands the system, he knows the cues, and he knows the audibles. But, you know, guys got to step up. I mean, last year we were all raving about Victor Cruz. He had a great summer camp last year, got injured. We were all excited about him, had a poor camp this year. I mean, he has an opportunity to make some plays. They signed Brandon Stokley. He can be somebody that is perfect to be in the slot to replace Steve Smith. Now, Travis Beckham, the tight end, I think initially they expected him to be that pass-catching tight end to roam and catch those ever-important third down
But Ballard receptions. Is now emerging as that kind of guy for the Giants.
Understood.
Beckham can't stay on the field. That's the problem. He's always hurt, this guy.
Yes, so, I mean, obviously, you know, not looking forward, but in a draft, I think we all know that that's one area that the Giants need to address.
All right, before we get to next year's draft.
the season's not over yet.
let's get to Sunday's game at 1 o'clock. The Eagles are opening up Lincoln Financial this week, their home opener against the Giants. The Giants have already lost to the Redskins. As we know, this is another big division game early. Greg, we know the back end of the Giants' schedule is really loaded with teams that the Giants could, you know, lose
and
the season there.
And they end the season at Giants Stadium, or I should say Giants Stadium, MetLife Field with the Cowboys.
The Snoop.
Yes. And we all know that playing a division team the last game of the season, that could be a situation where it's win and you're in.
Right. That's absolutely right. So how, first of all, having said that, how big is this game? I know it's early, but how big is a game like this against the Eagles, another divisional game, the third game of the season, how big is it on Sunday?
There are a lot of things going into this game. This is a huge game. I mean, the Giants have lost to the Eagles six straight times, including the playoffs. So obviously they want to get that monkey off their back. Early on in the season, you don't want to go 0-2 in your division, not even having played the Dallas Cowboys yet. So this is a game where it could propel them for the rest of the season, or it could spiral them for the rest of the season. And breaking this morning, it doesn't sound good for Mario Manningham. He's not going to play with his concussion, as well as Osimhen Yura. He seems to be out for this Sunday. So it doesn't look like any troops are coming in from the sidelines to help the Giants out.
Now, my whole thing with the Giants right now, even in the Rams win, they weren't really that impressive.
Agreed.
I mean,
weren't.
And
completely.
The one thing that I'm truly noticing about this team right now is I can't blame Eli Manning for anything except that one really awful pass where he just underthrew Manningham and it was intercepted. But he's got nobody. He has no weapons.
Yes.
I mean, they have a running game, which has, to me, underwhelmed so far this year. They played a lot better. They have 37 touches out of the 71 offensive plays in the last game, which I think they need to do more of because the playmakers right now are Bradshaw, are Jacobs, and
Hakeem
Nix. And I liked what I saw out of DJ Ware in the garbage time a little bit.
Yes.
But honestly, this is a big problem with the offensive line still trying to gel and no weapons. This is a problem for the Giants.
I completely agree with that, but, you know, nobody's going to feel sorry for them entering this game on Sunday. You're not going to hear any of the Eagle fans or the coaches saying, we're going to take it easy on you. So I feel that, you know, what the Giants need to do is, like you said, they need to lean on their run game. Maybe simplify a lot of packages. Don't go four wide. Don't go three wide. Maybe lean a lot more with the ground and pound.
I even liked that Eli was targeting Bradshaw and Jacobs in a screen pass game.
Yes.
This was something that we've been calling for a couple of seasons
now. How about that 3rd and 18? 3rd and 18, you think you just get a couple yards, get a nice easy field goal, and this guy takes it for a first down, which ensued to the Jacobs touchdown. So I completely agree. You might need to incorporate the backs into the run game and maybe not as much go deep, but maybe have a short passing game.
Let the record show the off-the-wall stenographer, can you make a note of it, that Joe has read my mind twice, because that's where I was going next. Greg, the first 2 weeks, you know football. That's why you're in here. That's why you're helping us out. You know, the Redskins, it seemed like every third down. The reason why the Giants were so bad on third down that first week is because Eli Manning had 7 to 8 guys in his face. It was a jailbreak with the Redskins. It was a jailbreak with the Rams. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to say. You know, Joe and I always scream, if they're going to blitz you all the time, if they're going to bring 7 or 8, the flat is going to be wide open with a screen.
Yes.
If you have man coverage with your 3 receivers or 4 receivers and they're bringing everybody else, what's open? It just shocks me that they're not doing that more.
That I completely agree with, as well as there's a situation that is developing after the first 2 games, which is third down. These guys have not done well on third down. It doesn't bode well to keep your defense on the field. And third downs, you kind of want to make those first downs, you know, lay one track after another, gain some momentum, gain some chemistry with your offense, because it's third down conversions that really are a key stat that I feel into teams that win, that as well as the turnover ratio.
You know, another thing that's concerning for me, again, this is a team that's 1-1, but to me, the Giants have now allowed, again, Rex Grossman to throw for 300 yards. They've allowed Sam Bradford to throw for 300 yards. They're allowing all of these huge plays. They're lucky. They're lucky that they're stopping teams in the red zone right now.
Yes.
Aaron Ross is getting beat right now. Just saying it's a bad situation.
But I do feel that, you know, with Rex Grossman as well as Sam Bradford going for 300 yards in the first two games, that can also be an attribute of not converting on third downs because you're giving the offense of the other team more opportunities to figure out what you're doing on defense, have more opportunities to take chances. If they had one of those long, sustained 80-yard drives, those long, sustained, you know, 50-yard, 10-play drives where you really wear down the defense, you know, you wouldn't be giving so many opportunities to the other team to take chances. I mean, you look at, you know, Rex Grossman. Right now, you could argue that, you know, he's playing the best quarterback out of all the quarterbacks in the NFC East, mm-hmm. you know. And Sam Bradford, I mean, granted, he's still young. He's a great quarterback. We could see that he's going to be a great quarterback. I shouldn't say he's great. This week, they're playing against Michael Vick, who's capable of putting up 300 yards passing as well as 90-some-odd yards rushing. So, you know, it's pretty much laid out for the Giants' defense what they need to do.
Just a couple more from me. The first thing is, I know I'm stating the obvious here, but I think it has to be stated. When you're a Navy SEAL, you have to go through something called Hell Week before you're even a SEAL. Mm-hmm. And Hell Week is exactly what I just said. Hell Week. Just read about it because I did, and it's unbelievable what these guys go through to become a Navy SEAL. And the Giants, you know, it's only a week for a Navy SEAL. The Giants go through Hell Week starting on November 6th, and it continues all the way through January 1st. Here it is. At the Patriots, at the 49ers,
West Coast,
Philadelphia,
again,
at New Orleans, Green Bay, Dallas, at Dallas, versus Washington, at the Jets, Dallas. That's their last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's their last 9 games of the season. And the only, you know, one you could say, yeah, we can get a win, is at San Francisco. And you said it as soon as I said San Francisco, West Coast. They always have issues on the West Coast. So, Greg, with those 9 games on the back end of their schedule, that just rams home the fact that this game in Philly, you need to get it.
Yes. I mean, you could say that potentially that this is a make-or-break game early on in the season. But you look at the back half of their season, they're playing the Patriots, you know, Tom Brady. The guy's throwing for nearly 1,000 yards in the first two games. They're playing Green Bay, Super Bowl champs. The one game, though, that I do feel that they can play well and actually win is at the Cowboys. If you look it up, the Giants actually have the highest point per game average at the new stadium in Dallas. And if for some reason, Eli always plays well at Dallas, but another player who's no longer on the team, Steve Smith, always had great games against the Cowboys, so that could be another attribute. But they need to figure out a way on how to piece together the wins now and figure out how to grind it out in the second half of the season.
Well, to me, look, this week comes down to this. The Eagles have the playmakers. I mean, they have DeSean Jackson. Mm-hmm. They have Jeremy Maclin. Mm-hmm. They have LeSean McCoy. Mm-hmm. They have Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. And they even have a tight end in Brent Celek who can do some damage.
Yes.
So to me, they have the playmakers. However, the Giants have two things that could be really positive in their favor. One is that it could rain this weekend, and it could slow that offense down a little bit.
The dream team.
Two is that Michael Vick is coming off a concussion. I would blitz the heck out of him with Pierre Paul and Justin Tuck, who's playing a little hurt himself, mm-hmm. and try to knock him on his behind as much as you can to slow them down.
Joe, I completely agree with you. I mean, I do have a couple keys to this Sunday's game that I think could provide a victory. One person that somebody doesn't usually talk about on the Eagles, you know, we talk about the Michael Vicks, the DeSean Jackson, the Jeremy Maclins, but what about LeSean McCoy? I mean, he's a dual threat guy, but not more so rushing. I think it's receiving because, you know, they send DeSean Jackson deep. He takes everybody with him 50 yards down the field, and you have that whole middle area of the field where you have, you know, a 5'10", 6-foot, 195-pound guy getting chased by linebackers, and he's the guy that's getting those 20-yard screen passes, those 20-yard rushes. I also feel that special teams, how many times have the special teams let the Giants down, i.e. last year against DeSean Jackson? So I think special teams this Sunday is going to play a key factor in not making plays, but more so not letting them happen. What about running the ball? Like you said, if it's going to rain this Sunday, this is Brandon Jacobs' weather. He's that big Escalade driving down to Henry Hudson, and everybody gets out of his way on a rainy day thinking, I'm not trying to get hit by this guy. Who wants to get hit by a big Escalade? You set up the run, and then you go deep with the play action, right? Now, let's talk about Eli Manning for a little bit. Eli Manning needs to play better. He needs to read the defense, control the line of scrimmage, and he needs to avoid that. I saw it. Why didn't you see it, Eli? Type of interception. Because he always has one of those passes per game. Now, another thing that the Giants have had a problem with, and they won that battle against the Rams Monday night, is the turnovers. For some reason last season, was it me or was it that the Giants were always in the hole two turnovers before they turned it on? Finally, it felt good to say, wow, Boldy got a turnover and we're up. Wow, it feels good that the Rams turn the ball over on that punt return and we're winning the turnover battle. I think if the Giants could do those things, they could eke out maybe a 24-21, maybe something late in the fourth quarter. Because if you notice, Eli Manning had no idea what was going on in the first half. Two-minute drill, classic Eli, walks him down the field for a touchdown.
So you're saying there's a chance the Giants could win this game Sunday?
A lot of things need to go their way. But is there a chance, my friend? That's why they play the game.
All right. That's Greg Berton. Joe, one more?
I was just going to say, I think if they're going to have a chance to win one against the Eagles this year, it's this one. Because of Vic's condition right now. And because Macklin's still, you know, a little woozy himself, I think this is the shot.
All right, Greg, thank you very much. Your maiden voyage was excellent. We appreciate you coming on and giving
thank
us
you,
some
Chris.
Thoughts on this Sunday's game between the Giants and Eagles. We wanted to do a little bit more, but unfortunately we ran out of time. So for Gregory E. Berton, that is at E.TV on Twitter. So make sure you look Greg up. You could tweet vicariously to me through Greg since I'm not on Twitter anymore. And, of course, at Joe Auriemma. Yes, for him and myself, Chris Sheeran, we want to wish you the best of weekends. Congratulations once again go out to the New York Yankees for winning the American League East. One down, a couple more to go to number 28. The mission, is it impossible? We will see. Starting next week. We'll see you next week, everybody.